Our high school guidance counselor used to ask us what you would do if you had $1 million, didn't have to work. And then invariably, whatever you'd say, that was supposed to be your career. So if you wanted to fix old cars, then you're supposed to be an auto mechanic.
So what did you say?
I never had an answer. I guess that's why I'm working at Initech.
No, you're working at Initech because that question is bullshit to begin with. If everyone listened to her, there'd be no janitors because no one would clean up if they had $1 million.
If I had $1 million. If I had $1 million.
Talking about millions of dollars.
What would you do if you had $1 million?
I'll tell you what I'd do, man. Two chicks at the same time, man.
We're living in a material world and I am a material girl. Or boy.
Well, what about you now? What would you do?
Besides two chicks at the same time?
Well, yeah.
Nothing.
Nothing, huh?
I would relax. I would sit on my ass all day. I would do nothing.
Well, you don't need $1 million to do nothing, man. Take a look at my cousin. He's broke, don't do
If I had $1 million. If I had $1 million.
Well, welcome to Stacks and Jacks. I'm Tom Howell, Andrew on the board. Sorry we're a little late. S&P futures up 5, NASDAQ futures up 11. And the reason why we were late is we have Kevin and Mike are on with us, but I understand they're waiting in line over at Costco to buy gold. Is that true, Kevin?
Actually, I went up to the dispensary to buy gold instead, but I don't know. It didn't look like a precious metal.
Gold hooch?
Oh, yeah.
You can buy, what do you get to buy here? They're selling between $100 and $200 million a month in gold. Can you believe that?
You get a discount because you're a member?
It's allegedly fine gold. It's 999.9. Essayer.
Well, next time I fill the gas tank while I'm over there, I'll give it a shot.
Costco selling 1 ounce bars made of nearly pure 24 karat gold. While the price is not disclosed online to non-members, it's estimated the product generally sells for about 2% above the spot price, which as of Tuesday morning is where do I have the spot price? I have the spot price at $23.65. So what are you going to pay? 2% is $50. $24.10 price. Well, no, but that's what you got to pay. And people, when you're buying it, I mean, what the hell? There you go.
Well, it's the gas savings that pays for it, so.
Yeah, it looks pretty cool here. The Suisse 1 ounce fine gold, 999, right on there. And then there's a backside. There's another emblem. It's kind of cool. I don't know what you can take.
Does it have the Kirkland brand on it?
No. This is. it's not exactly the whatever you want to call it. The store brand gold, but I wonder where they're getting it. I mean, I guess, you know, just buying it on the market.
Where would anybody go get it?
That's a good question. Actually, it's very difficult to deal with spot gold because we've had some potential clients. I don't know how I got in touch with these guys, but I did, and they allegedly have a whole bunch of spot gold. Now that you got me on the subject, it's actually fairly complicated because it's an asset like anything else, and if you want it to be able to be used, like to sell calls against it or do something like that, or use it as a margin equivalent, you have to get it into the system. And if you have a gold bar, it's a big deal to get it in the system. I mean, they're gonna have to melt it down. They're not gonna just assume there's not lead in the middle of the thing. It's a big deal to get it in the system for delivery. And, you know, people think that all they really have to do is buy a gold future and not sell it and get delivery. I think that the exchanges do not want to be your gold purchaser and seller. Plus, we have a listener, a long-time listener, who actually had some platinum. During the COVID or whatever, they wouldn't let him get the platinum out of there or something, and God only knows if they ever did an inventory at one of those places, but there's only, like, three or four depositories, I think. Again, I'm a little off the reservation here. Three or four depositories that the CME will say, okay, you've got 100 ounces of gold in there. That means you've got, you know, essentially it's the same as having, you know, 1,000 shares of stock type of thing, where you can sell calls against it and you can borrow against it. But it's sort of maneuvering gold around is not easy. And if you pull it out of there and say, I'll bring it back, they're going to want to melt it down again. I mean, they're not just going to let you bring it back in. It's very much like that's why the exchanges really do not want, you'd rather not have delivery. And part of what the exchanges do is make sure there's an orderly market in everything. Because you really don't want to deliver anything. Delivery is just the last gasp is how the spot prices match the futures prices, because if they don't, you can deliver corn or wheat or whatever it is, soybeans. But the last thing you want, I mean, if you put, you know, corn in the system in a warehouse, it has to be inspected. If you pull it out, drive it around the block and bring it back, it's all got to get inspected and stuff again. They don't just take your word for it. Well, same thing as with gold or silver or platinum or anything. It's just, I mean, it's a real dicey deal. So, I mean, walking around with a brick of gold is, it's nice to have, and probably it's worth getting it into the system so you can actually do something with it, but I'm not so sure that's really what you want. So there. So there. So how many bricks do you have, Mike?
What else is going on in the world? Good morning, Mike.
Yeah.
Good morning, Kevin and Tom. How are you guys?
We're doing good. Hey, good. One more little thing on this is, I don't know if you guys are students of the Depression so much.
Go ahead, Columbo.
Yeah. Yeah, one more thing. When you look at, people will say there were actually two depressions in the 30s, right? There was the one to 1935, and then there was one that started again in 1937. And one of the reasons why 1936 started to break out, and the Fed actually decreased the money supply because they thought that things were building up so fast. Mike probably knows this from his military history. Remember all the people who camped out in front of the White House back in, actually it was in Roosevelt. I might have started in Hoover's time, but the Roosevelt, they were demanding, in those days, and Mike, chime in if you want, you didn't get paid necessarily every month when you were in the Army. You got paid after the war was over, which is kind of weird, like if you survived. I don't exactly know how it works. Maybe Mike could help here, but a lot of people had not gotten paid from their World War One service, basically, was the bottom line. And
they went on strike up by D.C., right? And,
yeah, there was a huge Hooverville, for lack of a better term, of people. They started, it was across the street from the White House, wasn't it, Mike? That whole area that's park and expanse was all people living. And they end up, Eisenhower was the one of the guys that drove them out of there and burned the encampment down. Was led by who was the general in the Philippines that was half star and half idiot. The guy who signed the.
I think you just summarized about half of the generals in the Army. But go ahead.
No, the guy who was in the Philippines, MacArthur. Yeah, yeah. He actually led the thing, like to kick people out of there. And Eisenhower was like his right hand man. Anyway, those people were kicked out, sent home. After Roosevelt was in office for like 4 years, Congress passed a law saying we're going to pay these people. They wanted to get paid earlier. And it was still, now we're talking 1936, and they still hadn't gotten paid for World War One. And Roosevelt vetoed the thing for some reason. I don't know why. All the stuff I thought Roosevelt did pretty cool. I don't know what he did that for. Well, the Congress overrode the veto. So they essentially sent checks to all these guys in 1936, sort of like COVID checks. So they paid all these people out. In the same year, just circumstantially, they decided that you weren't allowed to hold gold anymore. So the government bought everybody's gold. This all happened in 1936. So there was a massive infusion of cash into the depressed economy in 1936. Between them buying gold from everybody who had it and sending these checks out to all these people who have been owed for, 18 years. And that's one of the reasons why 1936... looked like we were coming out of the Depression, and the Fed reacted to it, and then by cutting back on some of the money supply, and then all of a sudden, once those things were cashed, can you imagine how quickly, I use the term velocity of money, can you imagine how quickly that money was spent in a Depression household? It couldn't have lasted 2 days, going out buy food, buy something. I mean, I'm sure those people needed everything. So anyway, and that's how in 1936 it looks like there was a blip where there wasn't really a depression anymore. Because the government sent out checks. Those two things both happened in the same year. More than you needed to know, Mike. You didn't think you were sentencing yourself to this in the morning. But
Really, yeah, Tom, really it's all of your useless trivia is great.
Your useless information. Hey,
so that was the useless information segment. Now what do you want to discuss?
Well, hey, I would love your guys' opinion, not necessarily on the markets themselves, but on human psychology. I don't know if you listened to what I've been talking about this week, and I went back and revisited the early 80s when I first started, and how long it takes for people's psychology to change, even if stuff changes. And I didn't really want to talk, you know, today's market being too high, too low, but I'm not going to be out there being a prognosticator because, by the way, when you prognosticate, you're usually wrong. But I went back to when I first started. I was absolutely stunned how long it took when interest rates started to come down for the market to actually rally. I sort of had the feeling that they were, you know, much closer together, and then when I actually went back and looked, they weren't. And I don't remember you guys. I don't really expect you guys to remember what was going on in the market. I had just started, so I have vivid memories of it. That, you know, the market was, how low the market really was, and how people's attitude toward investing in stocks. And we're talking 1969. The S&P was 103, and in July of 82, it was 107. So you're talking 13 years where you didn't get anything being in the market, really. And, you know, you might have got some dividends, but. And you're getting paid 12 to 15 to 16% in CDs. I mean, nobody wanted to be in the market because it was like you're an idiot. What are you doing in there when you can get 16% somewhere else? And yet, it took a long time for interest rates to actually start coming down before the market moved up. And it's to me now, well, this could be totally wrong. The same thing is happening now. Interest rates are shooting up. Really over the last 18, 20 months, and the market is actually up, not down. And I'm just wondering, what is it about human psychology that even when there's kind of a tone change, people, I'm going to say then they resisted it, now they could be right. I mean, who knows, but why do you suppose that is?
Well, they were still making money with, the rates so high.
Yeah.
I mean, the first house we bought, we paid like 12.5% or 14% interest on the mortgage. So, and now people are worried when it's at 6%.
Well, because the price of the house is a lot higher. That's probably why.
That's probably true.
Well, how much did you? What did you pay for your first one? 120? 130?
I don't remember, Tom, to be honest with you.
Would you let the wife handle it?
No, we both did it, and it was a VA loan.
Okay.
I forget what the payment was.
Well, we paid, Robin and I paid $85 for this one in Beverly. Beautiful place, but it needs some work. And then I bought one about 3 years later in a double lot that I paid $135 for or something. And I think we had a pretty high mortgage on the one for $85. But it was, you know, it was a difference in $85 and like a mil. Yeah.
Right, exactly.
I mean, even if you're talking 12% and 85, you're talking what, a grand a month. You know, that's, you know, that was doable, and the taxes were a lot less. Insurance was nothing. You know, plus even remodeling was. I think I paid, you know, $7 a gallon for good paint. Now what is it, 60?
Right, exactly.
And yep. Anyway, but what? What do you think the aftermath
is? But Tom, you asked why are people slow to change or slow to shift gears? And I think the answer is that's human nature. People just are slow to change. And it doesn't matter what they are, how many, you know, and so, you know, I think people are, you know, that it, you know, it takes a highly motivated person to just stay on top of everything and read the tea leaves and go. And, you know, I just don't think that's what most people do. Most people are leading their lives. They want to, if they have money that needs to be taken care of, they just want the money to be, you know, put someplace safe and left alone for the most part. And, if you know, you kind of live in the world of investors, and that I don't think that's most people.
Well, I would agree. But there is a time lag to just about everything. I mean, I started this out by talking a few days ago regarding one of my original clients that researched the hell out of like every commodity, and he was an older guy, and he had nothing but dough, and he owned stuff. So he had nothing really to do all day except own. That's a good job for you, Mike. Just own. You know.
Yeah, I'll be a donor, yes.
Yeah, you just, what do? I own stuff. I guess it's a job, you know. It'd be a decent job.
I have a neighbor who does that.
Yeah, I just, what do? I own. You know, that's okay. you name it, ranches, apartment buildings, whatever it is. I just own them.
You know, strip malls, that kind of stuff.
Yeah, just whatever it takes. Cars and trucks. And he talked about how there was always a delay on everything that every commodity he traded. And every delay was different. But what I would love to have, and I don't know how you'd find this, back in those days, every market tout guy, Joe Granville was probably the most famous, every day the newsletter was sell all stocks. This was even after the kind of tone had sort of changed. Just like today, these interest rates are up, and everybody says, well, in the anticipation of it going down, you got to keep buying them. And maybe they're right. You know, it's very possible. But the industry is set up in such a way where if the market's been going up for 5 or 6 years and people are making money by just having you send them their money and it goes up without any kind of hedging or whatsoever, they're not going to change because that's all they know. Just like back in 1980, if you've been in the business since 1969, you hadn't made a dime. So everything you knew was sell stocks, right? You didn't know anything about buying them because if you did, you never went anywhere. It's all about kind of, I guess it's sort of like, Mike, if you look at military history, people who study military strategies, you end up studying the old war, don't you? To a certain extent?
Yes, you do. You kind of wait and see how things panned out.
So, I mean, a lot of guys that, you know, that's one of the things that George Marshall and those guys did going to World War II. They really didn't want any World War I generals, did they?
No. And I agree with Kevin. Most of the generals are overpaid. So.
Well, by the way, Mike, you came to that bar with me the one night in South Bend with a pool table with a poster where it said, just remember, everybody else in the world except you, his job is easy and he's overpaid.
Yeah.
Was that Samaris?
No, it was someplace. Mike, we only went there a couple times on a Friday night because he had a fish fry. And I remember him having a pool table that we did pretty good on. But I don't remember the name of the place.
And was it in South Bend or Mishawaka?
It was towards Mishawaka, but I think it was still in South Bend. I don't remember. I know they had good fish and cheap beer. Imagine that.
Yeah.
What'd you guys make of what's the summation of the NCAA? Is good, bad? I mean, the chalk kind of went the whole way in both girls and guys. It's the first time in how many years for the guys that the two number one picks were in the final, right?
Yeah, it was quite a while, yes.
It's also, the first back-to-back since Florida did it, and you know, back in the days of Joakim Noah.
Like I say, Joakim Noah was on that team, wasn't he?
Yeah,
he was.
And did he leave as a junior, or did he go his whole senior year?
I don't remember.
I think he might have left as a junior. They might have been able to do three. Anyway, but they didn't. Who was the coach of that team?
Billy Donovan.
That's right. How come the Bulls are so lousy?
From a Bulls coach.
Yeah.
Oh, Billy Donovan is the Bulls coach now?
Yeah.
Yes, he is.
Oh, wow.
He was in Oklahoma City for quite a while, but the Bulls hired him a few years ago. He's a good coach. You know, it's just he's got a crappy team of parts that don't fit.
And I'm not so sure a lot of these guys are coachable, but that's another issue. Well, we got the CPI number coming out today. All this stuff is starting to point towards, you know, election, and people are... I mean, yesterday was a real interesting day. We were up when I was doing the show. We were up in the morning pretty good. Then we just totally crapped out in the middle of the day, and this NVIDIA dropped like 30-some bucks at one time, like 39, because Intel or somebody came out with a chip that they said was going to be a rival to it, and all of a sudden the thing just fell off the... And then it came back maybe 10 bucks, and it's still... Stock was 950, I'm going to say 2-3 weeks ago, and now it's 850. So it's down some from its high, pretty much. I actually was last night. Out of all the things, I went to the meet my one of my lawyer buddies, and it turns out all these guys were there. We used to play softball with back in like 1980 or something. And one of the guys says, "No, more like 86." The guy says, "Gee, I'm doing great. I'm in Bitcoin, and my wife's in He's in Bitcoin, and the wife is in Nvidia. And I'm going, he said, what do you think? I said, well, you know, no point in me popping up an opinion on that. I said, you know, you got a couple of risky things there. I hope it works out for you, basically. But I don't know. What the CPI number coming out, what do you think that's going to show to everybody? Mike, what do you think?
Well, there's one thing it won't show, and that's the truth.
Yeah. When do you think that started, Kevin? I think it always was a lagging number, but when I was doing that stuff for Pullman in the 70s, I don't think people absolutely thought the number was wrong. It really, if you felt it was going up like 1% a month, it kind of reflected that. I'm not saying it was exactly what you thought or what you thought was right, but it seemed like it was never off that much.
I mean, let's do this. Let's go back and say, when do you think people were so uneducated about numbers in general and these numbers in particular? When did that start? Because that's when it got to be really easy to gaslight people. Because nobody is capable of digging into it themselves, or so few people are either incapable or not inclined, or both. And as a result, you get this top line number, it gets reported in the media, everybody says, oh, see, good number, everything's happy, or they just get tired of the gaslighting, and so they just are very dismissive about it and say, yeah, you keep telling me it's great, I don't see great.
Well, when did we, I'll rephrase the question, I guess, you look at this PC, and there's a real lot of people on 24-hour news, whether it's CNBC, CNN, whether it's Fox, or whether it's something, and yet, one thing, you know, if you're on the right, you listen to your side, and if you're on the left, you listen on your side, and that's all you believe, which is kind of crazy, but it seems to me, Kevin, that the obvious questions, the obvious statements, never really seem to get asked. I mean, somebody will go on there and they'll talk about the PCE number, the Fed's favorite number. Why doesn't somebody say, gee, how do I find the detail on the PCE number? And somebody might say, well, there is no detail. And I might say, well, then why the hell would I believe it if I can't even see what they're looking at? Do they even know what they're looking at? that's not being insulting to anybody. That's not being an asshole, I don't think. But it's what is it? How do you put it out there when nobody even knows what it is and you can't see any of it and you don't even know where it comes from? I mean, somebody would ask the question without being snide about it, but yet nobody does.
Well, we've talked about media a lot, and that they are not subject matter experts, and as a result, and they're not good at asking follow up questions. And heck, if you believe some of the things that have come out, I don't know if you know who Sage Steele is, for example, but she used to be an ESPN reporter. She had an interview with the president. She was given the questions to ask and told not to ask follow-ups. So even if you're inclined to ask follow-ups, you've got people with ideologies who are saying don't.
Well, but
I think there's a real problem is most of them don't know what to ask in a follow-up. So you can learn to, what you're supposed to do if you're in front of a camera. You can learn how to write a news story, but if you don't have any subject matter expertise, I don't care how good a writer you are, you're not gonna be informative.
Well, how do you combat or somehow get in the middle on a subject? Was it you, Kevin, last week that was talking about, or was it Russell that was talking about putting out papers that were somewhat controversial? It was somebody. I mean, maybe it was Carl. Of course, Carl's very controversial. But let's say, for instance, it was a different world, and competing with CNBC, Stocks and Jacks was a nationwide show where everybody, not everybody, but a lot of people listened to get their breaking financial news, and we had a staff of, 15 people getting interviewers and stuff. And we wanted to get the head of Exxon before CNBC, after the earnings came out. Well, according to what John tells me, because he was on CNBC forever, that guy will tell you the questions he will answer and what you're supposed to ask. And if you ask something else, they're never coming back. So it's a contest to get it's not really a news show at that point. It's, I want to get this guy on. He's, of course, I wanted the chairman of Exxon after his earnings come out. And oh, by the way, I'd like to be first. All of a sudden, now there's a price you have to pay for that, and I don't know exactly how do you deal with them, because we would want to get him or her on to talk to. I'm sure you'd like to ask him questions. So would I. So would Mike. They're not coming on if we ask them real questions, or they're never coming back. So it's, in other words, the guests are somewhat, if you're powerful enough, the guest controls the news, and obviously the most powerful guest is the president, right?
I mean, let's do a couple of things. First of all, and I've seen this, you know, in local sports media. So access is everything, and depending on where you are and what you do, it's either you have access or you don't have, you can't work. So that can be a big part of it. Now, what does that mean? It means that exactly what you described. If nobody will come on because you ask penetrating questions, then you no longer have access, therefore you don't have a show. So that's part of it. There's another part of it as well, though, and I'll use the example of Chris Wallace, the news guy. He works for CNN now. I don't know if he's doing very much. He went to do their streaming and it fell on its face in about 30 days. But he had been on Fox for a long time and had done the Sunday morning show on Fox. I remember Wallace once referring to those of us in official Washington. See, the national media people, especially around the political and financial worlds, consider themselves part of a club. And you don't want to be expelled from the club. It's one thing not to have your show. It's one thing not to have access, but it's even worse that you worked all your life, or you worked hard so you could get into an Ivy League school or whatever it is that got you into the club, and you don't want to lose your spot in the club. And so there you go. There's, you know, that's the motivating factor. And so, you know, people may not even be overtly dishonest. They may be kidding themselves, thinking they're totally honest brokers, because of course the club is right and we're the better people, you know, we're the higher level of people, so of course the club is the place to be, and of course the club is where the right people are. And you know, this is a weird pathology we have with media, but it's where we are today, I believe.
What was the song? I'm in with the in crowd and I go where the in crowd goes.
I'm in with the in crowd. Yep, I go where the in crowd goes.
God. You know, Kevin, I think that's actually pretty accurate. We had Kathy. Was it Kathy that got us Senator? Was it Matt Murphy?
I think it was Matt Murphy.
Big tall
Matt
Irish
Guitar
guy.
Matt Guitar Murphy. Yeah, Matt Guitar Murphy from the Blues Brothers. No, a different Matt Murphy.
A different Matt Murphy. And he came on, and I started asking him some questions, and he goes, "Whoa! So that's the way you want to play it at 6 o'clock in the morning?" and he goes, "I could play that way. Go ahead." He was fine with it. You know.
And what's he doing now?
Now, as usual, Mike, Kevin drops me the loaded question. He was
well,
the number...
He didn't stay...
Well, Tom, you're usually the one that's dropping the loaded question, or you just keep talking and don't let anybody ask any questions.
Well, that's... Unfortunately, I don't know why I got that habit, but... he was the second most powerful Republican in the state Senate, I believe, after Durkin, and one day he abruptly resigned. Now, whether or not it had something to do with the wife saying you better get back home or whatever, there were rumors of flying, but he is a pretty serious lobbyist, and he is still pretty powerful, I think. I could still call him. I haven't talked to him so long before COVID.
Well, look at all these guys in Congress that, you know, are serving three or four terms and then getting out. You know, Mike Gallagher was doing pretty good work on China and his areas of expertise. Now he's resigning from his position. And Kissinger,
and
whether you like him
work,
or
Mike?
Dislike him, you know.
Where's he going to work?
I think he's going to some lobbyist.
You know, he's going to work for a data services company that's a government contractor for the...
Oh, yeah, Palantir, right.
Palantir, yeah.
That's a little sniffy.
A little.
Well, in Palantir, we used to use those in the Army, and it wasn't a bad system.
What do they do, Mike?
Pardon?
What do they do?
It's an analytical tool to show connections and things like that. We used it to do counterterrorism and actually, they actually used it in Iraq also to track the bad guys.
So it analyzes like raw data or something?
Yeah, you got to keep putting data into it in order to get the data out of it. It's probably pretty time intensive.
Yeah, it's a predictive model on what people are going to do and where they're going to be.
Really?
Yeah.
I bet that's very interesting.
It's an artificial intelligence application, Tom.
No, it only started 6 months ago, Kevin.
No, it didn't.
AI.
No, it didn't. It just took off 6 months ago, maybe. But so you get those things going on. One of the things that I learned doing media was that that there are better and worse ways to ask questions. So you might have people that don't want to answer your questions directly, but you don't necessarily have to answer a direct question. And I'll give you an example. I've sat in so many press conferences with Mike Bragg, where we'd have all the media, all of the local media people who were covering Notre Dame basketball. And Mike was he was a good guy. He is a good guy. And he was it was really easy to work with him. However, the kinds of questions people would ask, and every once in a while you'd see a little grimace from him when someone asked a really dumb one, but he was always, he was kind to people and he would try to give them some kind of reasonable input. But you don't ask him, Mike, why aren't you playing so-and-so enough? Because he's not going to tell you that. Some freshman, he's not going to say, well, he kind of sucks in practice, or the guy
doesn't play defense or whatever.
He's not going to tell you that. But what I could do was I could say, Mike, would you mind just talking a little bit about the process for how a young basketball player comes into the program and earns playing time? Okay, that he'll answer. In fact, coaches, like most people, they love to talk shop. It's like getting Tom going, about gold and the gold market. People love to talk shop, so you have to ask the kind of question that is going to get them to do that, and then you can go back and fill in the blanks on, okay, now if I applied what he said to this player who can't manage to get on the court, although everybody thinks, God, we really need someone to play at that position, you sort of have an idea of that. So there are smarter and better ways to do it and worse ways to do it. And I actually had one time after one of those press conferences, I had one of the guys who does this for a living come up and go, man, you ask really good questions.
Well, there you go. Kevin, you think, just on a basketball question, and obviously Mike played as much or more than you, do you think... You see a lot of guys in football. I mean, Joe Montana had to be the most shining example. His game was way different than his practice game. He didn't give a crap about practice, I don't think. Does that happen in basketball too, you think, or no?
I am sure it does, but I can tell you that almost every coach, there's an occasional coach who takes the approach that the only way this guy's going to get better is to get some playing time. But and most fans think that way. Why don't you just put him on? How's he going to get better if he doesn't get in the games? But most coaches, you practice. You perform in practice, then you'll get to play. And it isn't necessarily the performance that says, oh, this guy is really good. What it is this guy knows his assignments. He has his defensive rotations down. He's in the right places at the right time, and he always hustles. That'll get you on the court. For almost every coach, that'll get you on the court. It's when you don't know what you're doing. A really good example of this, I don't know if you remember, Ty Nash played for Notre Dame. He was a starter for a couple of years, but he was a talented young forward, And he was constantly out of position. I remember right in the middle of a game when he did get in and having Torrey Jackson, who was an upperclassman and one of the leaders on the team, just so mad that he blew a defensive assignment that he just got right up in his face on the court and got after him. But, you know, there's a lot of times I've seen this with Shrewsbury, Micah Shrewsbury, the Notre Dame coach, because I went to just about all the games this year. I would just see it. Once I figured out how his thought process worked, I go, next whistle, that guy's coming out. you can just sort of tell. You better know what you're doing. You better carry out assignments. You better be prepared. That's what coaches expect.
Well, he better never coach a pro team. Those guys don't.
Well, his background was in the pros, Tom. I mean, he came from the Celtics.
I can't tell half of these teams. The Bulls,
the Celtics, huh?
I can't tell the Bulls where they're even supposed to be standing. They don't know.
Yeah.
Just seems to me.
And when you have 12 guys who do the wrong thing, that puts the coach in a bind.
Well, did you hear? I watched some of it last night, and Stacey King, who, you know, has earned the right, I guess, to criticize. I think he's really good, but then you can criticize. They had a 3-on-2 fast break, and he's going down, and he says, "You've got numbers. We've got the worst three-point shooting team," and he has it on film where two of the guys leave the guy in the middle and head for the corner wanting a three-point shot. He goes, "They're giving you a bucket here. They're giving you a layup. You don't go heading for the corner. What are these guys doing?" I mean, you know, I wonder, does a coach say the same thing, or everybody just wants 3 points now, or what? I mean,
there's Alabama's coach is one who says either a three-pointer or at the rim, but he would have taken the at the rim there very happily. You know, that's what the that's what your analytics will tell you, but you know it's really ultimately if you wanted to have the players really think it through, it's about the expected value. So what's the expected value with a 2-on-1 or a 3-on-1 fast break? Your expected value is nearly 2 points. When you peel off to the corner and feed the guy for the wide open shot, even if he's a good shooter, what's your expected value? Well, it's about 50% of 3 points, because you'd probably make about 50% if you're wide open, uncontested, and you're a good shooter. And then it works its way down from there. So you're giving away a half a point. That would be the way to think about it. That would be a way to teach the players to think about it, because if you're going to be smart, then you understand some of those things. I mean, really, especially in the regular season, you become card counters, you know, and you're just playing the odds.
Well, except the odds are never. What was it? Mike? You were on. We talked about who was the was it the coach of one of the guys that went to the Super Bowl? Was it Philadelphia? Was Philadelphia coach?
It was San Francisco's coach.
Where he said, "You can't tell me that 4th-and-1 is a good play if I don't have a guard that can beat their tackle."
Oh, you mean with Shanahan? Or
yeah,
Doug?
Yeah, it was Shanahan.
That was Shanahan.
Yeah, and I mean, obviously, we play ball every day, Mike. I mean, I get the part where if I learn how to do a 3-point shot and my feet were under me and I got the ball with nobody around me, that you probably could easily make the case that if I shot, you know, 35% from there versus 45% 5 feet closer, I'm way better off. Expected value in a 3-point play. But that's not the way these people realize it. They just think any 3-point play is better than the one inside. If you take a half-assed 12-footer up there, you might get that in. You can't take a half-assed 3-pointer and have it come close. There's a big difference.
Yeah, that's not understanding analytics. Because what analytics is, you know, when you just look at the data and the percentages, the first swipe at the percentages, that doesn't tell you much. It's just raw data. You have to start asking the questions about how many times you heard me say, data gives you the next question to ask. Yeah. So what's your next question when it comes to 3-point shots? Well, let's go with the easy ones first. Who's shooting it?
Yeah.
That makes a difference. And then we can start talking about some other ones that go with it. You know, what I just did on expected values, what you could do for it on game situation. If you're really going to go with the analytics, then everybody involved, and I talk to this, I talk to people in management classes and quality classes, all of them. I said, analytics are great. You gotta orient your team to the numbers. That's part of your job as a leader. That's part of your job as a coach in sport. You got to orient your team to the numbers, but it is more than just the raw data. What's the information that goes with it? How do you turn that into information? How do you slice it and dice it and make it situational? And that's the part, I think, that gets lost. So when you have Detroit's coach just say, analytics say go for it, so I'm going to go for it every time, that's just an abuse of statistics, an abuse of data.
What's real quick while we have you, Kevin, Mike's going to hang around for first part of John. Russell's missing today. What do you think on the election right now? I don't have a favorite or anything like that. It's amazing. It seems like in the last week or two, or correct me if I'm wrong, both sides are kind of sifting around for, I will say, the issue. This last week, it seems like everybody's floating abortion is a key issue.
Not everybody. Well, Trump did do an abortion announcement.
No, I'm saying, but I'm hearing a lot about that. Either, and now the week before it was something else. I mean, what is there at this early stage? I mean, it seems like they're changing every week or two. The economy was an issue a few weeks ago. Then it was, handling of the Gaza Strip thing. I mean, it seems like everybody's almost like doing a daily, I'll say almost like a focus group of what the issues are. It seems like it's going on right in front of our very eyes, or am I just...
Well, they may be sampling, but the Democrats would love to run on abortion because they got nothing else. So, what are they going to run on that that's a positive for them?
Well, the last 4 years haven't been horrible economically. Market's up, a lot of stuff's up. I mean...
Okay, so their message is we don't entirely suck.
Well, I mean... You and I know that the economy is not the job of one president. Anybody who thinks that, it's this constant iteration over a period of years. No matter who's in Congress, it seems like you can tell how screwed up things are when it's all Democrat in Congress. They can't get anything done. When it's all Republican, they can't get anything done. So there's splinters even between the groups, right? I mean, it seems to me. I don't know. What do you think the big issue is here? I mean, we're seeing some people have raises for the first time in a long time. You and I know, and Mike knows, they're nowhere near the prices of the CPI going up. But they got checks from COVID that Trump couldn't give them. I'm sure most people have forgotten that. I'm saying, how do you figure out what people have forgotten, what they haven't, and what they're focusing on? I mean, that's what
people have forgotten a lot, because they've forgotten all the tyranny of the COVID response. So
that was both sides.
Well, yeah, absolutely, it was, and anybody involved should be at the very least beaten with sticks, and maybe more than that. But there's going to be no hell to pay for that. So, yeah, if something that significant is not an issue at this point, who started that? That was Trump started that. Who doubled down on it? Biden. What are we supposed to do? Forget that? Forget that they tried to have people lose their jobs if they didn't get a vaccine they didn't want?
Well, I'm with you. I mean, but everybody, people just kind of run by it. I'm kind of surprised.
So we have a national attention span of about 3 months, so.
I'm going to say put the bad stuff out on Friday. By Monday, nobody knows about it.
Yeah, I think that's true. So what's the lingering issue?
Well, Rissa,
there's one big one out there, Tom.
I don't know. They all seem pretty big to me.
It's hard to make it. Typical.
No, but I'd say it's the economy, Tom, yeah. Or the border. One of the two.
Border, probably.
Yeah, both of those, because those aren't going away.
Well, the economy, the numbers on the economy. I don't see how you could compare these, which I rail about all the time, versus the Trump COVID era. I don't know how you could judge one to the other. I mean, Trump had all the problems with the COVID. Out of all the things I'd lambaste them on, that wouldn't be one of them.
Well, yeah, but here's the issue. Right now, the average family is having a really, really hard time making ends meet. And if you can't make ends meet, and you hold the president and the party in power responsible for that, whether that's fair or not, If you do, and you can't make ends meet, then, you know, there's your big issue. And it is really, you know, how many pundits have you seen? How many left-leaning pundits have you seen on saying, Biden's got to quit talking about Bidenomics? If nothing else, he's got to stop using the term, because he's associating himself with something that people don't like.
The overriding good numbers that keep coming out that none of us believe, by the way. Kevin, I honestly can't get a read on what people, they will, generally, I see an awful lot of people that will tell you the economy is pretty good, even though if I were to look at their pocketbook, it's not so good. I'm having trouble reading people here.
I don't have anybody, no normal people, who say the economy is good. None.
Yeah, and how do you do a way to measure inflation and not include food and gas, but yet consider that a credible number?
I guess I'm not arguing. I'm just kind of pushing back a little bit. That's been going on since 2000, and really since 2007. It's not. I mean, yes, I've been talking about it for.
It doesn't matter. It's more acute now, and people are really, really uncomfortable about it. Uncomfortable about it.
What do you think? Let's pick a group, Kevin, and we're not in the group, but what do you think the feelings are of, let's say, the auto workers that just got themselves a 20-something percent raise? I think you and I were the first people on the show to say, sounds to me like a cut. but to most...
Well, it's a short-term jolt, so yeah. You know, that's going to help you a little bit.
Actually, it was 20% over 5 years, so you didn't get it all at once. But I'm saying, do they think they're screwed, or do they think they got a good contract? I don't know. I haven't talked to one. I'm asking a question.
That's because we don't make too many cars here in the United States. So.
Well,
actually, we do make quite a few, but nevertheless.
I think, as you know, you guys both know, I think the average person is in way worse shape than he even thinks he is. And you see the industries where, you know, in my industry down here, you hear people that are, you know, kind of being sued all the time, not necessarily brokerage firms or whatever. Plus, I hang out with a bunch of lawyers. It is stunning that, matter of fact, one of my clients, that is his son, and he's a great kid, went to work for this really big law firm, and they're talking, you know, I don't know what they're billing the kid out at, what, $600? But how is it that a worker here can make, you know, if you got a good job, you're making, what, $35-$40 an hour, which is not horrible. Maybe say it's even 50, and you're doing something that's, you know, I'm going to say, I want to use the term worthwhile. Yet your mechanic charges you $100 and a quarter, your lawyer charges you $600, your dentist charges you $300. I mean, you're not even close. What it's pretty scary, and what some industries have just been able to move forward. I mean, just like we talked last week, the young lady who wrote the article for CNBC regarding. What's the name of the drug, Kevin? Was the diabetes fat drug? She said it costs less than $5 to make. It's $1,000 a dose. And I didn't hear anybody on CNBC talking about it. And I see commercials all over the place. Do they not want to wreck the commercial? Going back to what you were saying earlier.
Tom, who is a big advertiser on every major media outlet?
Yeah, those guys.
Sorry, we don't criticize our advertisers.
Why did they let the little girl write the article? I guess that's my next question. Hoping nobody read it.
Yeah. Where was it featured?
It was on their CNBC homepage.
Yeah, right up front, big news.
Like the fourth or fifth one down, it wasn't hidden.
Okay, all right.
I don't know how quick they got it off there, but I mean,
yeah, that could be a factor too.
But it is kind of mean. I mean, how do you basically? I mean, for how many? What was it, 40 or 50 million bucks the last year? Was it Viagra? What was the other one? The one where they sit in the hot tub, or hitting the tub separately.
The Alice, maybe, yeah. Whatever it is.
But they were, what were they, Mike? They were $50 million to the NFL, weren't they, their last year?
Yeah, they advertised heavily.
And how do you get on CNBC, because they were on there all the time, too. How do you get on there and say, geez, these guys are abusing the patent laws? I mean, I don't know if they, would they grab the... advertisement, they probably would.
It probably would. They say, you want our advertisement, you're going to stop doing those kind of reports. Now, so where are we now on this? And, well, first of all, we're at the generics. So the advertising for Viagra and such hasn't gone away. It's just different people now. So,
well, they can't have as much money at $5 a pill as they did at 50.
Well, probably not. But nevertheless, you have all of these. You know, what is it? Hims is one of them. I'm trying to remember the names of some of these things because I see them all the time.
Well, Hims is like a doctor's outfit, isn't it?
But it's all male issues.
Well, we do have our issues, these males, you know.
Well, yeah, I know. Well, but they target hair loss, erectile dysfunction, and I forget what else.
Big gut?
Yeah, maybe.
Bad knees. I mean, duh.
Go online, shop for your hip replacement.
Oh, yeah, for your hip replacement. Well, Kevin, we'll let you go. We're going to break. Mike, you want to hang around a little bit for John?
Sure, Tom.
We'll be S&Ps are up 10, NASDAQ's up 35. We also got to cover the CPI in 25 minutes here. So I'll have that one up and running, Mike, so we can comment on that as well. Be right back, Stocks and Jocks.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Hi, I'm Audrey Johnson, an owner of Home Source Realty and a frequent contributor to Stocks and Jocks. If you're nervous about the stock market and considering diversification, or are looking for a rate of return way better than your banks, consider adding rental properties to your portfolio. Whether it's a condo, single family, or multi-unit building, I can help you select a property that meets your financial needs. Call or text me at 708-349-3456. That's 708-349-3456. Or visit my website at myhomesourcerealty.com. That's myhomesourcerealty.com.
Interested in promoting your business to a high-end audience comprised of entrepreneurs, traders, executives, and the everyday business person? Consider advertising on Stocks and Jocks. With a devout listenership covering the Chicago market, along with a vast online presence, advertising on Stocks and Jocks may be just what it takes to put your business over the top. For more information, contact me, Matt Weber, at matt@stocksandjocks.net. That's matt@stocksandjocks.net.
Hello and welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Howell. We're on the board. SP Futures up 12. NASDAQ Futures up 43. We're creeping here. Yesterday, very strange day. We were up in the morning, and we really catapulted down, then came all the way back on the close. So not much of a... Let's put it this way. It's hard to draw a conclusion off of yesterday. I don't know where we were, except they were beating up on NVIDIA quite a bit. Somebody came out with somewhat of a rival chip. So at one point, it was down like $39, but it's trading $8.48, down another $49 this morning. I think the thing topped out at 960 a few weeks ago. Maybe I'll get that a little bit later. Over in Europe, we have the DAX up 148. That's 0.8%, so that's a pretty good rally there. We have the FTSE up 62. That's 0.8%. We've got the CAC around up 51. So these guys are pretty bullish on the whole deal here, so we'll see how that works out for them. Over in Asia, we've got the... Nikkei actually down 191, up down with these guys, but it's 0.5%. They were way up yesterday. Hang Seng up 311. That's almost 2%, over 17,000. Wow. It says here, Asia markets mostly fall as Japan corporate inflation climbs. I'm not going to say the Hang Seng did not fall. They were way the hell up. Actually, you know what? I'm sorry. Yeah, no, that's right. They were open last night. Shanghai down 21.7%. So again, we constantly get this difference between the Hang Seng going one way and the Shanghai another, which is perplexing, to say the least. Yesterday, we ended up Dow down 9, S&P up 7, NASDAQ down up 52. The NASDAQ up was in the last 10 minutes. It was down most of the day. So like I said, it was a confusing day. A 10-year down 2 basis points, 4.34. The Bund down 2 basis points, 2.35. Japan up a basis point, almost at 0.8, 0.795. We've got oil creeping again, up 55 cents, 85.78. Brent up 55 cents, 89.97, almost 90 bucks. Natural gas up 5 cents, 192. Arbob unchanged, 276. We've got gold up another 540, 23.67. As John Flanagan's probably out of Costco buying his. Silver up 24 cents, 28.22. Copper up 3 cents, 432. We've got the U.S. dollar actually unchanged. The euro is at 108.5 like it was yesterday. British pound at 127, pretty much what it was yesterday. We have Bitcoin up 92, 69,015, under 70,000, but still way up there. I think, Andrew, you with us, or did you head out? I think Andrew headed out. Guys, are you here?
I'm still here, Tom.
Morning, Tom.
Well,
morning, John.
So what do you guys make of this CPI report today? I mean, market, one minute you think it leaked and we rallied yesterday, the next minute we turn around the other way, you think, oh, it leaked the other way. I've got it all zeroed up here. Just last month, we had the change month over month was 0.6 in all items, which was really, really hot. The adjusted change was down to 0.4, so somehow they adjusted it from 0.6 to 0.4. Year over year was 3.2. So we'll see what it comes in today. What do you guys... I think that they're going to have some increase in gasoline prices this month, because it depends on what... What does Carl say, John? It's a third week? It's a sample week or something in the month?
Yeah. Oh, it would have to be. I mean, just looking around my place, what the gas prices are doing. So
well, they're up...
dramatically in the last 3 weeks.
I'm saying it's up almost 80 cents in the last 5 weeks out in the burbs. It was 330 something. Now it's 419.
Yeah. It was 430, I think, when I looked at the station near me here.
Well, the city
kind of looked white.
The guy by me is $5. He's proud to be the highest in the city. The guy at North and Nelson there. He's proud. The Mike, what are you guys paying in Virginia?
We're paying about $3.50. I think, Tom, for regular, and it's probably over $4 for anything but, well, for premium, I'm sorry.
Well, you guys like you with those 1%er cars, you got to get the premium.
Yeah, you're right about that.
What kind of cars, are there cars that actually need like 91 octane? I guess there are, huh?
Yeah, there are. Our BMW takes only premium.
Wow. The I remember that old blue Oldsmobile that only took in those days they used to call it Ethel, right?
Ethel.
Yeah. Oh yeah, that's right.
Yeah. And you know why they called it Ethel?
Because of Fred and
Ethel, right?
No, it had tetraethyl lead in there.
Oh, tetraethyl.
That upped the octane. It was tetraethyl lead. My brother was in the work for was it Union Tank? It was one of the tank car companies for a while. And right out of school, before he went to the accounting firm, maybe it was after. But he, if you recall, when you were very, very young, the train went by and you saw the real, real tiny tank cars. You say, well, "What's in those things?" Those were tetraethyl lead cars. It's like one of the most poisonous thing other than botulism, like damn near in the world. And when they retired those cars, they would fill them up with concrete and dump them in the ocean. That's how bad the stuff was. I mean, how kind of important it was to get lead out of the gasoline. That stuff was brutal. Anywho, but it made the cars go fast. That was the good news. So there, more than you guys needed to know. So what do you think this is going to show today, and is it going to make any difference?
I bet it's going to show. Go ahead, Mike.
Go ahead, John. Sorry.
I bet it's going to show an unexpected increase, unexpected to the extent that the people crush the numbers don't want us to see it. It will be unexpected to them. But I don't think it's going to make a whole lot of difference, Tom. And, you know, it's what you and Mike and Kevin were saying in the last hour about, you know, whether people really pay attention to these things very much. And, you know, it's one thing to have a machinery of all these numbers to kind of sift through, but when people, you know, start to see that those numbers don't express at all what they see themselves or what they feel, then you've got, you know, fewer and fewer people believing the numbers or paying attention to them when they come out. And in an election year, I just don't believe that these numbers are reliable no matter who's in office, because they're being tweaked in a way to allay people's fears, you know, or perhaps to stir them up. But in what we're seeing happening now, I can't believe that they want people to be upset by what they're seeing. So I think we're going to see some funny numbers, as we pretty much always do lately.
I'm going to, how do you, I guess maybe we'll lean on Mike a little bit here, because he, fortunately, and maybe unfortunately, because I'm not going to ask him a question, has worked in the governmental area. Well, I'll start by telling a story at the CBOE. I was on the board for two terms, and it was a long time ago, and it was, you know, it was a good place, and the people who were in staff were good people. But there's always a politics of something. You know, I mean, firms are pushing for something that the guys on the floor don't want. I mean, there's always stuff. I mean, whenever people gather together, there's going to be politics, for God's sake. And there was. And you could always, there was like a, even if nobody even talked about it at the board, like if you, something about how hard would you go after a member firm for breaking a rule on the floor. You know, especially if the member firm was on the board, okay? There was no memo that said, hey, don't go after Merrill Lynch for really screwing up a crossing order that cost a customer $5,000 or something. Don't. And it, you know, it's not like if you really pushed them, they wouldn't look at it or something. But it was almost like there was a, if you wet your finger, it was like in Casablanca, and put it up to wind, you could tell which way the wind was blowing. Remember, what did he say? The wind is blowing from Vichy or something like Vichy. That. And there's just kind of a sense that everybody has of how they want things to turn out in terms of reports and everything else. So even if you did a report, even if you knew the chairman felt this way about the issue, and you really didn't, you might give something sort of truthful, but you weren't about to come back and say, God, who anybody who thinks the other side's a moron? You know, I mean, there was a sense to everything you did. That's just the way people are, I think. I mean, when you talk about these CPI numbers, and I look at them just like you do, John. I mean, I look at them and I look at these certain lines and I go, wait a minute, that's not right. What are we doing? How do you think? And maybe we'll ask Mike, at what level does that happen? Does the lowest person come in and know the price of rice was up 20% and say it was up 2%? I mean, does the lowest person guy take that upon himself, or is it his boss, or is it another boss, or somebody up at the top that says, I don't care what these numbers, do what you have to do with the rest of the numbers, because the top number is going to be 3% and not 6%, or something like that. Where does the intervention come from? I don't know why I'm hung up on that, but how do you even do it? I mean, you've got to have hundreds of people screwing around here. Do they know what's happening? Are they part of it? Do they not?
There used to be a report that the CIA did annually. It was about the districts in Afghanistan that were either dominated or not dominated by the Taliban. The CIA would use their method. My guys would use our method. And invariably, every year, we disagreed almost wholeheartedly with what the CIA guys were saying. And it was all about, you know, you had to portray success in the Afghan area in order to be successful. And we did not have to portray that because we didn't have a dog in that fight. You know, we weren't fortifying the government and, you know, we weren't providing troops. I mean, we provided some troops, but not too bad. But, you know, the CIA talk about the districts was always much more positive than our talk, and they would use different metrics to reflect their views, and we would use metrics to reflect our views. So it can always be manipulated.
But I mean, did it get so bad? And don't answer this if you don't want to. Where you would have a beer with a CIA guy? Yeah, we know it's all screwed up. We just turned it all. I mean, is it ever that blatant, or it just kind of cruises up.
No, it was pretty blatant. It definitely was very blatant.
Wow.
They were just painting a flawed picture for politics. In the wake of 9/11, we were, they did a congressional report and all that, and we were told not to politicize intelligence. Well, now intelligence is so politicized, it's ridiculous. And it's the same with all of the figures from the government. The Bureau of Labor and Statistics, they get paid to, personally, I think, to paint a positive picture. So they got to interpret the numbers in a way that's generally positive.
But someplace, somewhere, there's a person. I was going to say a guy, but it could be lady. There's a person who has to see the number and change it. And I guess I'm fixated with, I'm dying to find out at what level that happens at.
Well, it happens at a pretty low level because of the figures have got to come up through the bureaucracy.
So you're saying way down, there's a line for brown rice, and you knew it went up 5%, and you're saying it's up 2. Somebody
right.
is at that level.
Somebody is making a change early on to reflect what they want it to say. Just like this whole presidential year, the whole election year, everything. I don't know that we'll ever hear the truth.
Well, wasn't Clinton alleged to be the first guy that actually would use focus groups before he had a policy or before he gave a speech or something like that?
Well, and Karl Rove's is big on it too, I think. So, they don't numbers don't get out unless they favor them, and I think Obama did quite a bit of that too, actually. So,
well, I mean, how do you, if you were, Mike, you probably don't know this, but when I ran for the board, I ran from the outside, and we had to go take media training for like 5 hours one night. I remember it like it was yesterday. It was the most fascinating thing I did. I mean, what Kevin was talking earlier about people getting questions. I mean, part of it is, I'll just be real brief, where this lady was terrific giving the class, and thank God she picked on the other guy and not me, because she made a monkey out of him, and she would have done just easily with me. As a way, you have to have your talking points down, because she says you never want to say no to an interview. Because you can't afford to buy the time. You can't buy 2 minutes of national TV time. I got news for you. You can't. For you just to be on there to give your spiel. Somebody's going to interview you. You say yes, but you have to get your message out there in the 2 minutes. And it could be as simple as if you're doing the interview, "Hey, Tom, how's your golf game?" "Mike, I love golf, but boy, since I'm running for president, I don't have time for it. This is what we're focusing on." Something like that.
Yeah.
But you have to do it. You can't get to the extreme like these guys are, where you ask them about the economy, and they talk about some rocket that just went off and wasn't it a great launch? You can't turn it so much that you sound like an idiot, which I think some guys do now. So it's kind of a fine line. But and John knows. I mean, we all have the three of us. It's why we're still hanging together after all these years. We have pretty much the same basic beliefs in how you're supposed to treat people and how you're supposed to tell the truth. And yet, I'm going to say that if one of us was running and the other two were writing speeches, we probably wouldn't give the... If we're running for mayor in Chicago, we probably wouldn't give the exact same speech to the Chicago Teachers Union, who are going to try and dissolve as soon as we can.
If we wanted to win, Tom.
Yeah, I'm saying you're going to have to adjust some. Now, the question is, how much is some, and do you lose your integrity along the way? I mean, and I don't know the answer to that, to be honest with you. I mean...
Well, just to consider the CPI, trustworthiness issue, with the way spreadsheets are created, as anybody who's used Excel knows, it's pretty easy to figure out what your target number, you would like it to be, and you can... back build numbers that will get you to that. It's all weighted anyway, in particular ways, all the way down to the lowest level of data gathering. So I have no proof of this. I don't want to indict things that I have no reason to or any cause to, but it would seem to me very easy to decide well in advance what we want this number to be and what are the consequences if it's not this. So let's think of a range of a number we can live with, and let's figure out how we can make the data come out to that. And maybe there's real data somewhere, but it could be at a very high level where somebody just pushes a button and the alternate data is what we see published, and where somebody else down below knows about this too. I can't say for sure, but I can't believe that it's any more, you know, upstanding than that. I would think there's so much riding on this, there's so much money and power in the balance, that somebody is just going to let the data speak for itself. It's going to have to be tweaked and maybe grossly manipulated in the process. So I have to assume that's how it always is now.
Well, we're gonna head on. I'm gonna say, John, that if it was me manipulating it, I'd want 95% of the people to be doing a straight story, so they would never be part of it. When you get there to the top, I'd have some funky adjustment on the top, and I wouldn't even tell anybody else. I mean, I wouldn't want all these people compromised.
Well, right, and that's just from a security standpoint, it would make more sense.
We're going to go, hey, Andrew, we're going to break early because I want to come back, and the CPI is coming out in like a minute. So let's do a really quick break. SP Futures up 14, NASDAQ Futures up 60. We'll be right back.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to factor in the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other life decision. Your brain is smarter than your gut, and that's why you owe it to yourself to read Luckbox. We've made it easy because Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with timely, actionable trading ideas, and equips you with savvy investing tactics you don't already know, all while exploring how to live your best life through music, spirits, food, sports, travel, fitness, and a whole lot more. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on controlling their financial futures. It's for overachievers and alpha types who don't buy into Wall Street's investment gurus. It's for mavericks who believe in life, luxury, and the pursuit of happiness. It's for you! Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Stocks, jocks,
stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Stocks, jocks,
stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Hello, Nordbank Stocks and Jocks. Andrew, let's just get these numbers out here. I'll do a couple quick ones, and then by the time we get the rest of the world stuff, maybe we'll do that in a couple of minutes. These numbers just came out at 0.4 versus 0.3, so they're a little hotter. And year over year is 3.5 versus 3.4, which has got S&P futures down 52. Yeah, 52. NASDAQ futures down 241. So these numbers have not landed very well. So just go right back to the guys, and we'll talk about this in a bit. When everything settles down, we'll give the numbers in a bit. Guys, I got the unadjusted change, 0.6 for the month, for the second month in a row, and the adjusted change, 0.4. So we've got 3 months in a row, even using the adjusted, we've got December to January, 0.3, but January to February, 0.4, February to March, 0.4. So even the adjusted, you multiply that by 12, you're talking 4.8, right? So we're not, the year over year, they've got 3.5, but actually, I mean, you've got 2.4s in a row. You multiply that, you know, the 0.8 by 6, you get to the same spot, 4.8. So it's hotter than people thought. Let's see where the energy part is, how much that. We get to the bottom on food. We're away from food, away from home, energy. All items less food and energy, same number, 0.4, 0.4, so, which is somewhat interesting. We've got energy actually is at 1.1. So that's really hot. Food, on the other hand, is actually lower. Not lower, but we get the top line here on food.
Yeah, I don't think I buy that.
Well, I buy the energy part.
At least food is, and maybe even more than that.
Food is food was unchanged last month, and it's 0.1 this month. So I'm going to say that's I've got some stuff here that's down. Cereals down. How can cereals be down 1.5%? You count the, count the box shrinking? Breakfast cereal down 1.6. You go through here, but this is the part I don't get. The unadjusted number is mean, there's an unadjusted and there's an adjusted. I don't see how you do this, but like for instance, we've got ham. Some poor guy or some lady is out checking out hams. I mean, right? I'm laughing here, but I'm sure to do it is actually pretty difficult. Whatever you do is pretty difficult if you do the job right. But the unadjusted ham is down 1.1%. Somebody adjusts it down to 2.7%. Who's that guy? So let's just, John, you and I send Mike out. Hey, Mike, go survey the ham, see what it's doing this month versus last month. You come back and say, it looks like minus 1.1, and we go, nah, let's make that 2.7. Why does this intrigue me, Mike? What is my personality that whenever somebody changes something, I have to know why?
Well, you like the numbers, Tom.
Well, but not all this. Ham, excluding canned, is only 2.6. When was the last time you had a canned ham?
You know, I don't know, Tom. My mom used to do that for a living. That's how she made some money later on in life. She collected stats for the Bureau of Labor Statistics. So,
well, I'll tell you, all of us, the group together, everybody knew everybody's mom and dad. I really liked your mom and dad. They were terrific people. I don't know how they ended up with you, but somehow they were. We all in our senior year, we had all the moms and dads up and had a big party. And you'd swear they were us. They all got together, got along like it was. Talk about a similar group, huh?
Yeah, I guess so. I mean, well.
But you had what? You had you and then what? Five sisters after you or six?
Five sisters after me.
Wow. You're trying to get another mic and didn't get there, huh?
That's right. That's exactly right.
God. Anyways, I mean, I'm intrigued by this, but these numbers are not good. And the weird part of the adjustments, if you use that number, okay, and I'm not saying you should, that's 2 months in a row of 0.6 on the unadjusted. That's a lot.
Well, and that's, you know, the way things are. You know, in the real world, prices are up and people are struggling. So, I mean, it's just, it's very difficult to paint a positive picture of the economy right now.
Mike, do you think, since you started that conversation, I think there's a huge difference in the last 4 years, and I, just because you guys were doing, you were in the Army doing stuff, and John was teaching, and I was working for Pullman, hacking around with inflation numbers. I mean, that's why it's so over the tip of my brain all the time. We had a lot of inflation in those days, but people somehow were able to, at least the back end of it, were able to catch up with it, because your interest rates, you always made a little bit more than inflation if you had any money in the bank. And a lot of the people who had the COLA stuff kind of kept up with it, even though you lost the taxes and stuff. You sort of, after that 4 or 5 years that I was involved with it, at least in that piece of it, when people had gotten some COLA along the line, and places that hired you were at least aware that if they gave you a 5% raise and last year inflation was 10%, that they're actually giving you a cut in pay. I mean, there was at least an awareness to it, which I don't think it ever got to that point here. But it was not life-changing, I don't think, Mike or Jan. I think this time, in the last 4 or 5 years, we've now got, I'm going to lob one out there, and you guys can kick me one way or the other. I'm going to say 70% of the population now will never afford a new car and may never afford a new house. And that didn't happen in the 80s, 70s and 80s.
Think back too, Tom. I mean, in the 80s, there was not the easy access to credit, even at steep interest rates for the average person. So it wasn't like if you had a tough month where you couldn't make ends meet, you put it on the tab on your Visa or MasterCard and, you know, figured out you pay it off eventually a little bit every month. The way credit was viewed and the way it was doled out to people was very different 40, 50 years ago. And, you know, credit standards were really high. I mean, to get a charge account at a lot of places was out of reach for a lot of, you know, perfectly, you know, stable households, but they just didn't have enough earning power.
How tough was it to get, like, a Sears charge? I thought they'd start you out with a couple hundred bucks, tough, real easy.
It was always tough for some people, certainly. And now it really isn't tough for that many people. Of course, I say that knowing that, you know, getting the credit card is one thing. Being able to afford 25% interest on a revolving balance is another. So, but people couldn't be suckered so easily 50 or 60 years ago. The credit options weren't there. And, you know, people who earned a lot of money didn't really need access to charge accounts, but they had it if they, you know, had other expenses in a month. But you gradually saw this creep into the consciousness of people. People of all ages found themselves bombarded with credit card offers. And what that's done, of course, is strangled their ability to survive in times like this, because the credit cards are maxed out. It's record high debts on these cards now. We didn't have that as a factor 4 years ago.
Well, you didn't.
That's one thing that's changed.
If you don't have a credit, if you blow a transmission, you're talking. What did Dan Janita say? $25,000, and is you better have a credit card. I mean, I don't know who the hell's got $25,000 to write a check.
Blow a payment on that, because then you're
really screwed. What was I don't remember. I know exactly what my first one was because our buddy Mike was involved, and he doesn't know why he was involved. Mike, when we were still in college, I got a thing from Union Oil of California. Remember Union 76? Remember those guys?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Well, they sent me a credit card saying, we've decided that college graduates or college seniors in good standing or good credit risk. So they sent me this credit card. I think maybe my $200, $300 was the credit limit or something. And, of course, in South Bend, we didn't have any Union 76 stations. And we were going somewhere. I don't know if it was our senior year. We were heading down to Florida or something. And all of a sudden, I get the cancellation in the mail. And they said, you haven't used it, so we're canceling it. I'm going, wait a minute. We're heading to Florida next week. For the first time, I actually might need the damn thing. They canceled it on me. So I call them up, and I say, hey, there's not a Union 76 station within 50 miles. But next week, my buddies, you and the rest of the guys, we're heading down to Florida. They say, okay, you can use it. So they let me. I don't think we used it on the trip up and back. At least we had it just in case. But oil companies and Sears and Fields in those places had the cards, right?
Oh yeah. Well, right. My dad working for the post office was. They were invited under this big study in 1963 or 64 to have postal workers participate in the study of relationship between diet and cholesterol and likelihood for cardiac problems. So if you signed up for it, you had to adhere to their regimen of the kind of food that they were prescribing. There's a guy at Northwestern University, Jeremiah Stamler, who started this program, got the funding for it, and they used the Postal Service as a target group. So, you know, you got this list of all the stuff you had to purchase. My mother had to prepare this food differently for my dad as part of the study. And you'd go in and be tested by their physicians periodically. But the perk was that all this food, which you had to use if you were in the study, was sold by Marshall Field.
Really?
And anybody who participated in the study was given automatically a charge account at Marshall Field. And I remember my mother and my dad kind of chuckling at the time, saying, but there's no way my dad would have qualified for a Marshall Field charge account on a postal worker's salary, even though we had a house and two cars and went to private schools and took vacations every year and never really had money worries. But you never would have gotten a Marshall Field charge account. And of course, we got it. My mother had it for the rest of her life. I got a Marshall Field's charge account back in the 70s, not even the blink of an eye. I was not a big earner. So it had really changed between the 60s and the 70s. And access to credit, but people are now just dependent on it, and this is what's the saddest thing about it. I mean, this is, you know, because car payments have exploded, insurance payments have exploded, you know, the balances are just running up on these things, and people don't have the earning power to sustain it.
Well, there were places that when they first came out with the credit cards, if you went in and said, I want a loan, like I did, this happened to me when I was doing the remodeling stuff with Robin. I went to this First National Bank in Evergreen Park, and the first time they said, you're not getting a loan, but oh, by the way, how would you like one of these credit cards? We'll give you a $10,000 line of credit and a credit card. I'm going, but no loan. Right. Isn't that the same?
Oh, it's a loan.
Anyway, we're going through some of these.
It's a serious loan.
Yeah, it's a serious loan. We got gasoline, unleaded regular, up 1.9%. We've got fuel oil. What is fuel oil? Down 1.3%. I don't know where they got that one. Propane, kerosene, and firewood down 1.3%. Energy services up a little bit. Electricity up 0.9%. A pipe gas service unchanged. Well, I would hope so, since gas is down tremendously. So you've got all commodities, less food and energy. Like I said, the unadjusted is 0.5. So this is a pretty horrible report. And by the way, it's showing in the market. We've got the S&P's down 75. Ouch. It's 1.25%. Makes that 1.4%. NASDAQ's almost down 300. 283, 284 dropping as we speak. And I've got my machine is a sea of red. Every stock in the Dow pre-market is down. Caterpillar down 780. I've got Home Depot down 680. But they're all red. United Health down 292. Salesforce down 476. There's not a winner anywhere here. Even gold has dropped. It's now down $14. It was up earlier. So I'm going to say this is about as worse a report as anybody could have possibly imagined. And so I don't know what that means. It means no.
And I bet it'll be adjusted even worse next month.
Yeah, you know, I don't know. I mean, if you adjust it to 0.4, that's what is that? It's times 12 is 4.8, right? Well, it's nowhere near 2, like these guys are talking about. And I think if you listen to the different economists on the show, kind of two things are happening. One is, I don't think the Fed is actually pouring that much money in the system right now. Matter of fact, I think they're probably pretty flat on the money supply. And their balance sheet is actually continuing to come down. Now, you can do one without the other, okay? But they're maintaining the money supply neutral, but you have Japan and China, which are increasing theirs. And I think when you put money in the pool anywhere around the world right now, it kind of creeps over to the other guy. Plus, Hal was pretty articulate yesterday talking about the incredible amount of reserves that were poured in the system during the COVID era have never really made their way out into the society altogether. And this is remember, Mike, when we used to trudge over to economics classes, and then when they talked about monetary theory, they always say it takes 6 months to 8 months for monetary theory to work, or monetary moves to work. Which, in other words, if you drop the interest rate from 5 to 4.5, or raise it to 5.5, it would take a period of time for that to work its way through the market, because you're draining money out of the system, or you're adding money to the system. It takes a while before the banks now have some more money to loan, and oh, by the way, they get the loan, or somebody comes in and wants the loan. There's a lot to it, and it took a while. Well, Mike, listening back to those days, remembering those professors, when you up the money supply by 40% in 18 months, I don't think any of those numbers apply. You know, I mean, the system can't even absorb it. It was getting kicked back to the Fed every night. Hal thinks that there's still excess reserves from then that hasn't worked their way out. What do you think? Thinking back from all those days we spent in class together.
Well, the government just keeps pouring money in too, Tom. Whether that corresponds with the M2 or not, I don't know. But you know, we can't keep running these inflated numbers. You know,
well, it should correspond to M2. That's what I'm saying. It doesn't appear that it is. That's a question I'm asking in a clumsy way. It looks like money's pouring in. Yet, if you look at the M2 numbers, it's not. But it sure as hell looks like it is, doesn't it?
Yeah, that's true. But, you know, we just have too much deficit spending. You know, nobody has the guts to cut spending. So, you know, and then, you know, Biden keeps, okay, well, he's tried to figure out now 3 or 4 times how to keep the student loans in existence, because he doesn't want to cut that, because that means votes.
Well, and somewhere, I think the Republicans, much as they would hate to pay another nickel, have to realize that Trump's tax decrease for the corporations was a horrendous idea. I mean, why should they pay 21%? I mean, what do you think? I don't know if I've ever asked you this. What do you think of my idea? That to me, I don't know why nobody's ever proposed this. Corporate taxes, why don't you charge corporations the same thing you charge people? Because they're supposed to be, by your Supreme Court, a regular person, and yet let them deduct dividends so you only pay it once. You only pay taxes once. Get rid of the double taxation. Make these people pay some dividends so you don't have the Warren Buffetts of the world sitting on $90 zillion, these other places. Pay more, but only pay once, which actually probably means you pay a little less, actually, depending on... But to me, that makes it so fair. Why doesn't anybody want to do that? Is it because it's fair or what?
I don't know, Tom. You know, it just doesn't make any sense to me, some of the things that we're doing now. So
we've been doing this double taxation forever, though.
Right, and the Republicans keep harping about it, but then they do nothing about it when they're in power. So
you know who
knows?
The first person to tell us that was just a horrible idea. And Jan, you were off learning English or whatever you were doing. Remember Professor Dinkelo? He had a whole class on it one day of what a horrible idea it was. They have a double taxation of corporate earnings and how it just screwed everything up. It made people hang on to dividends they shouldn't have, and how the owners never got the money. And I mean, he went on for a couple of days, I remember, on that. And the University of Chicago, they just said the same thing. So if everybody's known that for decades, why can't we fix it?
No idea, Tom.
Do you agree with that, or I mean, the fact that that would help, or no?
No, I don't think we should have double taxation. But I mean, I have no good idea why they can't fix it. You know, why can't they fix the border? You know, why can't we figure that out? You know, why can't we fix immigration? Our politicians, we ought to just start again. But you know, the power corrupts absolutely, so they stay in power. You know?
Well, you remember, you might not remember as much, John, you certainly do. Remember Danny Rastenkowski?
Of course.
He used to come, I'm going to say, every 6 months or so to the SIBO, because he was here in Chicago. And we, you know, in those days, I don't know how this got so corrupt, but I mean, we're talking the 90s when I was on the board. And if somebody came to town, you would invite the person over. I mean, matter of fact, Bratsky had some young lady who, and there was Duke before him had somebody else. They kind of knew everybody's schedules or how they got on the. How do you find out what visiting people are in your town, Mike? There's got to be somewhere where senators and representatives post their schedules. I would believe somewhere, or somebody knows.
Yeah, probably on their sites now. Who knows then?
But she would get once every couple of weeks. There'd be a visiting senator or congressman, and we'd have a breakfast, then the people on the board would be invited, and a few other guys from the trading floor and so forth. It was kind of during the day, so you had to stop trading, which most people didn't want to do. You know, and you had your CBO, we had the world's best cookies, I'll say that for them. You know, and coffee and all that stuff, and the guy'd sit down. And I think the most you could give the person was $500. So you'd give the person a $500. I don't think anybody, you can buy anybody for $500, right? I mean, but they would come in, and most guys didn't know. You know, Rastenkowski did, but most guys didn't know squat about the options exchange. So you'd have a little presentation about what you did and how it helped people and blah, 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 and what was important to you. And then there'd be a question, and he would talk about his stuff. And there'd be kind of a question and answer. And I got the feeling that this wasn't a payoff for $500. This was democracy at its highest level. Somebody going to sit down and visit and talk to people he normally would, where you could sit there and you could ask Dan a question if you wanted to. And I thought it was really, really positive. And one day, Rastenkowski started talking about capital gains. One of the guys asked him about capital gains. He goes, you know, I don't understand this whole capital gains thing. Because he was pretty comfortable with everyone from Chicago. He said, you know, if you buy something at $50 or $100, and 10 years from now you sell it for $200, but the inflation's been 100% over the 10 years, I don't see how you made any money. He goes, why you got to pay tax on that? I have no idea. He goes, now, on the other hand, if you buy something for $100 this year and a year and a day you sell it for $200, to me, I don't see why you get to pay half when you only had the thing for a year and you just made... Well, he goes, why don't we just index the damn thing and say if you... Of course, now with our current CPI... they sure as hell wouldn't want to do that. They never get any money.
No.
But I mean, normally, if you bought, an old car, a classic car for $20,000, and 10 years from now you sold it for $40,000, and the inflation was 100% along the way, you didn't make anything, did you? Or if you sold it, if you doubled it in a year and a day, that's real income, right? He says, why don't we just index the damn thing? He goes, every time I start the conversation, nobody, it never goes past the bar. And he said that. Never goes past the bar. Nobody wants to do it. He goes, to me, it makes so much sense.
One of the reasons he was removed, Tom.
Well, this is long before he got booted out. But,
yeah, they're building a file out of
him. Oh, yeah. Yeah, he said something like that. But, I mean, there's a lot of stuff that makes a little common sense that just never seems to...
Right.
I don't know.
But there's no room for common sense at this point.
So what's the... these numbers came in hot. What's the spin going to be? Market's back to only down 62, so it's coming back a little bit. What do you think?
Well, they'll figure out something to spin. Well, they'll say that gas only went up a little bit, blah, 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 and food has remained relatively stable. They'll come up with some line.
Yeah, let me see what else on the bottom. We'd be remiss if we didn't talk about housing and medical care. Medical care, commodities, drugs, blah, blah, blah. Where's the full medical thing here? I'll find it. Prescription drugs up 0.3%. Non-prescription drugs. And we've got... Let me see if I can find housing. I'll find it. Services, shelter, rent of shelter up 0.6%. So that's creeping. You got to figure
that. High, actually, yeah,
yeah, you got to figure that's going to creep because it was down so low for so long, and yet they're going to have to match it. A rent of primary residence, they got it up 5.7% from last year. I don't know. There was a couple years there. Was what, John? It was up 20.
Yeah.
And I think
that's a suppressed number too. I mean, just the impression I have is a lot more than 5.7.
Well, that's what I'm saying. Are we starting to catch up? Is the question? Are they trying to? The owner's equivalent rent of a residence, which is the same, which means for home ownership, is up 5.9% year over year, and it's up 0.4 last month. Man, I don't know. Housing prices are up a lot more than that, I think, in the last 2 years.
Yep.
So, yeah, they're kind of messing with you there. I mean, I think those are the ones that I have a real problem with. And the other one is the medical care stuff. I mean, I don't... let me see what they did with the... funeral expenses are up 1.5%. Fortunately, we didn't need those. Of course, they really care, I guess.
People are dying at faster rates.
So. Yeah, that's actually helped Social Security, right?
Yeah,
it does actually.
You know, it's up huge. I don't know if you've seen Chicago now. All these people are adopting the adopted dogs during the COVID. They're putting their animals back in the pound, right? And part of that is. The vet costs have absolutely gone huge. And they're saying that the veterinary cost is 7-point-something. Veterinary service is up 9.6% year over year. Well, that's a lot.
That is a lot.
That's still low. That's low.
Yeah, and you have to have money to be able to afford a dog if you want to take care of the poor guy or girl. I mean, it's health insurance still down 15% year over year.
That's a bold-faced lie.
Oh, without a doubt. Yeah. You know how they are calculating that, Mike? You're not going to believe
this. No idea, Tom.
They're looking at the retained earnings of the insurance companies and trying to get an implied cost. So if their retained earnings are going down, they're actually saying that your insurance, the cost of your insurance is going down, even though it's going up. They've got some totally convoluted way. What do you think? I mean, I'm not going to.
Well, everything insurance wise has gone up. Housing insurance has gone up. Car insurance has gone up. Medical insurance has gone up. Dental insurance has gone up. So how can they say that it's reducing? I just don't understand that. But that's.
What do you suspect? Because I don't think. Well, you're with the veterans and so forth. But if you were 35 and had a family of four, and all of a sudden you get bleep canned from work. With no, you know, whatever, you're past the whole one that keep you with the COBRA and stuff. If you just went online today or went to an insurance agent and said, I want a really solid medical policy for me and my family, what do you suppose the number is a month? I'm going to say $2,500 easy.
I don't even know about that. I would say it's at least $400 or $500, but they get you on the deductibles. We have a neighbor that their deductible is $10,000 a year, so they got to spend $10,000 in order to get anything. So that's why the the Obamacare, or really just current current insurance, is out of control because of the deductible.
I would agree. There's most of us like to help other people out, our group, right? I mean, there's no question about that. There's a guy in the building here. He's really actually a really good friend. He's an engineer slash janitor or whatever. He does everything. Well, he had to go get a little hernia. Well, it's always a little hernia if it's on somebody else, right? If it's on you, it's a big hernia. But he had to get that taken care of, and he did. Now he's got, it's kind of half-ass insurance sort of through the building that he contributes to, right? Now, he's got like a $5,000 deductible. Somewhere in the...
Well, that's pretty good, actually, if he's got a $5,000.
But then I think he has to pay 20% of the procedure or something, or 20% of the hospital, or 10% or some number. And yet, if you go online and you say, okay, for these little surgical service places, they're supposedly pretty good, from what I understand. The cost of that sort of hernia fix, if you just walked in and paid cash, was around, I'm going to say, $3,500. Now, his cost, maybe $4,000. Now, his cost with his stuff, between the $5,000 deductible and they wanted $20,000 to do it, so he had to pay 20% of that, which is what, $4,000. He was at $9,000 versus $4,000. And he says to me, what should I do? And you know what, Mike? Think for a second. You too, Jan. I couldn't give him an answer. Because
I'd have paid cash.
Okay, but now something else happens.
But you got to be, you have to be able to afford to pay the cash.
All right, but now,
that's the big deal.
Okay, but think further. What do you think, Jan, before I critique Mike?
Well, could you go anyplace else and get a second opinion?
Well, I mean, but just say though. But no, think of it this way: if he pays the $9,000, okay, now he's used up his deductible, and it's only March. So if something else happens.
Yeah, that's a valid point. Then he doesn't have to pay more.
But right? The numbers, Mike, were so friggin' close. Somebody as smart as us figured those numbers out. They made an absolute, almost break even on the deal. Now, if you assume nothing's going to happen to you and the family for the rest of the year and get away with it, you're way better off paying $4,000 cash, right? But if next week the son, you know, messes up an ankle playing soccer, and now you got to pay the deductible, then you're right back to the $9,000 you could have paid before, right?
Yeah.
These guys are pretty clever. They're like
real
clever.
Well, that's why they're working these actuarial tables. You know, they got it. It's a science, isn't it?
Yeah. I mean, they're good at it, right? I mean, it's and I said, you know, I don't know. You just got to flip a coin. I think you're almost better off paying the $9,000.
If you got a whole family to take care of, and if it's early in the year, then you are better off paying the $9,000.
Yeah, I mean, it's a...
Find the lowest credit card rate you have in your arsenal.
Yeah, basically. But, I mean, these guys are clever. And I don't see... If you and I, the three of us, we got to dash here, guys. By the way, so this is a lot of fun with you two dudes. If we had to sit down and you know, they're going to... The three-headed monster was going to go to the White House. If we were going to list, like, three things that we really had to deal with, well, maybe five things. I mean, one of... To me, it would have to be the monopolies and prescription drugs and stuff. That's just sucking us. Combinations maybe in hospitals. Mike, I'm sure, would have some stuff having to do with the military. We'd probably have to do something in education, for God's sake. I don't know that any one of those... How many could we even attempt to tackle in 4 years? I mean, every one of them is a massive undertaking, in my opinion. What do you guys think? I mean, how could you even start...
Well, you got to start somewhere, and I would start with immigration. We've had a problem with that for years, and I would just, because there's too many things tied into the immigration right now.
The Biden administration has made it much harder to fire people in government offices, so you've got, you know, you don't really have any way to make a sea change, even with, you know, an election cycle, if the people who are there can't be move or replace merely because, you know, there's been a difference of opinion in the last election. These people are there, you know, forever, pretty much. And that's that means any kind of change is going to be a lot slower or not happen at all.
Well, Walty, we can run over a second here because we started a little late. What do you do? Let's say, I'll just pick this one out. And I'm sure they're all good people. I'm sure they come to work and try and do something. Let's say the consumer affairs thing or whatever the hell I'm going to say Elizabeth Warren's pet project, right? These people that watch out for consumers. Now, I think when they were starting that up, now I'm not at all adverse to watching out for consumers. I mean, but it seems to me that a lot of the stuff that they were charged with doing, you know, like what the banks do and those kinds of things, that's what the Comptroller of Concerns is supposed to do. That's what the Federal Reserve is supposed to do. It seems like there was a lot of people already doing that. Federal Deposit Insurance Corp. All those people were supposed to be riding herd on this stuff anyway, I think. So you got these 15,000 people. I'm going to say they're good people. Maybe you can use them somewhere else. But I think the whole function is duplicative. And I would like to see them all, not necessarily gone, but have the people who are supposed to do the other stuff do it. Is it even possible? I don't want to walk in there and have 15,000 people's boxes on the street when they show up at work. I'm not that kind of guy, but I also don't need this duplication either. How do I find a better spot for them? Maybe they can do some stuff even in the Army that you don't necessarily need a soldier. I don't know. Mike knows more about it. But what kind of power does the president have even to start that process, John? How do you even do it?
Very little power, Tom. The administrative state is a lot stronger than the executive branch, and nobody views what they're doing as service. They view it as a career path and a lifetime appointment, as if you're sitting on the Supreme Court or something. And the idea of them having to look for another job when their 4 years is up, well, how dare you make me do that much work? You know, it should be the opposite. It's like, this is okay. It was not my lifetime gig. I should be doing something else with my life besides, sitting here collecting a government pension when I'm, old and gray.
But, I mean, you're supposed to be doing it. But what did... I mean, everybody loves Ronald Reagan. I'm lukewarm. The guy was there 8 years and didn't prosecute an antitrust case. What does the antitrust group do all day? Just figure out where to go to lunch? I mean, what do you do?
Yeah, who knows?
You're probably helping... Read help Nancy Reagan read her horoscopes.
I mean, you reach the point where at the end of it, I'm sure there's stuff you do, there's stuff you process, you move paper from one desk to the other, but boy, showing my age. But I mean, in reality, what do you do all day? I mean, I don't.
You dream about retirement, Tom.
Oh, God. Who wants to be retired? You guys are retired.
Well,
but you guys are active.
A comfortable retirement, and that's. Well, that's nice to dream about when you're still collecting a paycheck from doing nothing but dreaming.
Well, by the way, you'd be a lot more comfortable if you'd come see me last night. We had a great group. I could see you tonight,
I can't tonight.
Mike, what do I got to do to get John out of the place? I got to go hook him like a fish and drag him out, or what?
I don't know. Maybe the 50th reunion, maybe we'll see the John that we think is on the air.
I really will be there. Yeah. I paid it already.
Oh, God. Hey, guys, thank you very much. S&P futures are down on their low here, 76. NASDAQ futures down 280. Let's just say the three of us weren't the only people who thought this report wasn't so hot. That's a fair statement. Thank you, guys. John, talk to you on Monday. Tomorrow we got you covered. Dan's going to stay longer. So we'll talk to you on Monday. Mike will talk to you soon as well. Back tomorrow, Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks is brought to you by PTI Securities and Futures. Go to ptisecurities.com. PTI Pro Direct. Trade for as low as a penny per share and a dollar per option contract. Learn more at ptiprodirect.com. Nadex. Offering an intuitive way to trade the financial markets. Visit nadex.com. Home Source Realty. Call Audrey Johnson at 708-349-3456. Hamzy Analytics. Listen to Fari Hamzy every other Thursday and visit HamzyAnalytics.com. ChiroMed. Back or neck pain? Schedule a complimentary consultation by calling 708-403-2727. DAX Research. Tune in for David Andelman's technical analysis on Mondays and Thursdays and call 1-800-821-4968.